The hour 10:15 having arrived, we'll call the House Tax Committee meeting to order when we have a quorum. So folks, will please take their seats. Okay, the first bill we have today before us is House File 550. I will move House File 50, and it'll be for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. And members, all of us, what we're looking at here is just one section of the bill, so I will have Mr. Baker introduce his bill and then go to the section that concerns this committee. I think the other sections go to, like, have been to energy or going to energy or something like that. So when Representative Baker, when we have a quorum, I will be moving the bill. We do not have a quorum quite at this point. So, Mr. Baker, if you could... we don't actually have the bill before us, but if you could describe House File 550 and what sections we're looking at.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm introducing, or not, I guess I'm not introducing it yet. I'll talk about House File 550, which is the Rural Propane Act that I introduced out in Wilmer, Minnesota. We took the Jobs and Energy Committee out to Wilmer and had a very good debate and good discussion. I'm proud also to have Representative Marquard co-sign on this bill as well for me. What it basically does as a general rule is provides some incentives for folks out in rural Minnesota or wherever in Minnesota that uses propane to allow more storage in greater Minnesota. And also another large component of this, which really doesn't affect this committee, is the pre-buy program of allocating $5 million in our state general fund up front to lock in lower rates for folks in the summer, and then we will get reimbursed that $5 million from the federal LIHEAP program that comes out in October when the federal fiscal year starts. So generally, that's what it is doing. My intent of this is really just, again, to provide low-income folks better options to alleviate more winters like we experienced last year with the extreme shortages weeks we had, extreme temperatures, which compounded many times over to a lot of hardships on a lot of Minnesotans. So the component that we'd like to talk about today, again, is Section 7, which really identifies giving a sales tax break for the next 2 years for propane tanks of 100 gallons or more. And so, again, the idea of that is to try to encourage folks to have more storage on their facilities, on their farms, on their properties, so that storage can be not as much of an issue in the future if we're having that. So with that, Mr. Chair, I guess I stand for questions if there's anything more you need from me.
Thank you, Representative Baker. First of all, I would ask from the audience here, is there anyone that wishes to testify on behalf of Section 7, House File 550, or with concerns? Okay, I don't see anybody. Is there anyone, does the department have any comments they'd like to make? You don't see anything there. Okay, members, questions? Chair Knobloch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Baker, I see that I don't use propane for my own heating, so I don't know much about it except when I pick it up for my barbecue. Let me ask you, I see you don't have the exemption applying to the lease of a propane tank. Why, and I presume that otherwise it would be taxable, why would you have it only for purchase and not lease?
Representative Baker.
Representative, Mr. Chairman, Representative Knobloch, I guess we were encouraging, you know, it didn't come up on the leasing part of it. I guess our discussion wasn't about the leasing program. Most of the time that is owned then by the suppliers who own the tank at that time. Now, I guess if they're going to be owning or buying new tanks, that'll apply to them. But we didn't include that for a variety of reasons. I guess it wasn't included in this bill.
Mayor Knobloch.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Baker, I guess I'm neither advocating for it or against it. I guess I don't know enough about the market to know if people who are lower income are more apt to lease a tank rather than own a tank. I guess how much does it cost to buy a 100-gallon propane tank? I mean, how much would this save someone if I was to go out and buy a 100-gallon propane tank?
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Knobloch, according to the Department of Revenue analysis, A cost of a new tank, 100-gallon tank, is roughly $2,000.
Chair Nava.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Chair Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was going to say, just to Representative Knobloch's question, one of the goals of this bill is to incentivize expansion of energy infrastructure and storage. So leasing really would not provide for an expansion of that infrastructure. It's more for infrastructure development. But I think the author answered the question fine. So,
any other questions for members? Anyone else from the audience would like to testify on behalf of or with concerns on the bill? With that, do we have a quorum? We don't quite have a quorum yet. So when we have a quorum, I will move the bill for possible inclusion. We can't do it right now, but I'll break in and do that. Okay, item next, let's go to House File 747, a Davis Small Business Farm Property Increase to State Tax Subtraction Provided. We'll be spending the bulk of the meeting members on House File 700. So when we have a quorum, I'll move House File 747. Either Mr. Michael or maybe if someone from House Research could tell me what my bill does.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House File 747, with the author's amendment that I assume will be adopted by the committee once you have a quorum. What the bill does is to essentially have a one-time increase in the maximum subtraction for qualified farm and small business property under the estate tax, and then to tie that maximum amount to the indexing of the federal exclusion amount in the future. So what it does is it essentially provides a $430,000 in one-time increase in that exemption amount effective for decedents dying in 2015 and then indexing it after that. When the law was originally enacted, the federal exemption was $5 million, and so the qualified farm and small business exemption was set at an amount equal to the Minnesota exemption plus an amount to equal the federal exemption, but it did not take into account the future indexing because Congress had not at that point enacted the indexing of the federal exclusion amount.
Thank you, Mr. Michael. We officially have a quorum. I'll officially call the meeting to order. We'll back up a little bit here. Representative Petersburg moves the minutes of February 17th, 2015. Any additions or corrections? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. I will go back then and I will move House File 550, the bill we just heard from Representative Baker, for possible inclusion in an omnibus tax bill. Okay, item next. I will move House File 747. I will now move the HO 747A1 amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would like. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Okay, now we're on 747 as amended. Is there anyone in the before we get to member questions, is there anyone in the audience that wish to testify on behalf of or with concerns to House File 747? Looks like an airplane, doesn't it? House File 747 as amended. Member questions? Hearing none, I will move House File 747 as amended to be considered for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, members. Okay, item next, the last item today. Let's see here. I will move House File 700. And to get the bill in the form that the author would like, I'll move HO 700A1 amendment. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. We now have House File 700 before us as amended. So if Mr. Who is going to describe this one? Okay. Please proceed, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. What HF 700 would do is it would repeal the annual indexing of the excise tax on cigarettes, and as amended, it would also set the excise tax at $2.90 per pack of 20, and that would be on an ongoing basis, so it would no longer go up.
Thank you, Mr. Clement. So what I'm doing is I'm raising the cigarette tax but repealing the inflator in effect.
Mr. Chairman, yes, in effect, that's what's happening.
Well, that'll go over good. Okay. I'm... It says increase from 283 to 290. Oh, okay. Okay. So I guess I'm not raising the cigarette tax. It's at the current rate at 290, and we're simply repealing the inflator. So just to see how we're doing here, I've got some folks listed here that would like to testify. The first one I have now, just I want to make sure my list is good for folks in the audience here. John Dunham, Brady Olson, Steve Rush, Molly Melanin, and Matt Schaefer. Is there anyone else in the audience that wishes to testify for the bill as amended or with concerns? So I think that's who we're going to work with. So we'll take some testimony. We'll go into then member questions. How many of the folks, let's see, I've got John Dunham, who's for, who's against? Okay. Let's go with the folks that have concerns first. So Molly Molinan and Matt Schaefer, maybe if you can come down together, we'll do the with concerns, and then we'll do the supporting kind of in groups, if that's okay.
Good morning.
See, you never call, you never write. If I didn't put this bill in, you guys wouldn't be even be here. Isn't that the way it goes? Well, welcome to the committee. Who would like to go first? Please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Absolutely.
Please.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Molly Moylanen, and I work for Clearway Minnesota. Our mission is to reduce the harm that tobacco causes the people of Minnesota. I co-chair Raise It for Health. We're a coalition of 30 health and nonprofit organizations in the state working to keep tobacco prices high. High tobacco prices are proven to drive down smoking, especially among kids. Our members include the American Cancer Society, the Heart Association, the Association for Non-Smokers Minnesota, the Lung Association, Blue Cross, Health Partners, the local Public Health Association, the Mayo Clinic, the Minnesota Medical Association, and many others. In 2013, the legislature passed a significant tax, increasing the tax on cigarettes and other tobacco products. Many of you led this effort, and we are so grateful. Today, the price increase is working to reduce health care costs, to protect kids, and to save lives. That is why we oppose House File 700. According to the 2014 Minnesota Youth Tobacco Survey, cigarette smoking by high school students fell from 18.1% in 2011 to 10.6% in 2014. This means 20,000 fewer youth are smoking today than just 3 years ago. We also saw a dramatic drop in the young adult, the 18 to 24-year-old rate, from 21.8% in 2010 to 15.3% in 2014. Youth and young adults are extremely price sensitive, and the new data reflects this fact. The tax also reduced smoking among adults. The new Minnesota Adult Tobacco Survey reported that adult smoking fell from 16% in 2010 to 14.4% in 2014. The survey gives direct evidence of the link between cigarette taxes and smoking declines. Smokers reported that the tax increase influenced their smoking. 60% thought about quitting, 48% cut down on smoking, and 44.2% made quit attempts, all because of the 2013 price increase. In addition, more than half of those who successfully quit attributed their success to the tax. Over 60% said the price increase helped them to make a quit attempt and said it helped them to stay smoke-free after quitting. The relationship between cigarette taxes and smoking declines has been well documented by science. We do not want to walk back the progress you helped achieve in 2013. The tobacco industry is always targeting kids and specific vulnerable populations, many of which have unacceptably high smoking rates. Upholding the true cost of the tobacco tax through an annual increase will prevent more youth from starting and will motivate more smokers to quit and prevent former smokers from relapsing. Now is not the time to take the foot off the gas. Tobacco is still the leading cause of preventable death and disease in our state and costs $2.9 billion every year. Through proven policies like smoke-free laws and high tobacco prices, we can achieve a tobacco-free future. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Matt Schaefer. I'm with the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network, testifying in opposition to House File 700.
Actually, you have concerns.
We do have concerns.
You have concerns. Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Chairman, one of the reasons our organization has concerns is right now about one-third of every cancer diagnosis in our country can be attributed to tobacco use. And in previous legislatures, we've stuck to that number, although last week we should point out that the New England Journal of Medicine published a study conducted by our organization presenting evidence that smoking alone might actually cause tens of thousands more deaths per year than what the Surgeon General currently estimates, which is about 480,000 per year. So right now, we're believing it's more like over 500,000. The reason our organization joined the Raise It for Health Coalition and advocating for an increase in the price of tobacco products is because we know that price is the number one way to break that cycle of addiction that's going to lead to those preventable deaths that we don't want to see, and quite frankly, they end up running up the costs of the Health and Human Services budget, who we'll probably be meeting here later. Ultimately, nobody would like to see Minnesotans pay a tobacco tax less than our organizations. We just have a different way of approaching it. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. I've got a couple questions, then we'll go to questions from members here. Just for the record, Ms. Moylanen, does your organization support banning tobacco?
Sir, every time. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Clearway, Minnesota supports following science-based recommendations, including smoke-free laws, increasing the price of tobacco, and prevention and cessation services. We are a science-based organization. We're going to follow the science, and those are the policies that are really proven to reduce smoking and tobacco use.
Ms. Mullen, wouldn't the science say ban it?
The science at this point would not say ban it. We know that proven policies are what works, and that's what we're going to continue to pursue.
Okay. Do you really believe that if someone is thinking about starting smoking that they're going to stop smoking because, or they're going to not smoke because we have an inflator on there?
I think the overall, Mr. Chair, thank you, I think the overall price is going to have a major impact on decisions to continue or to start. Yes.
Okay, you know, it's interesting because if you look at the governor's budget proposal, he has, I think, 11 tobacco cops in there to stop smuggling from North Dakota, and I think it was actually Missouri. They don't border Minnesota, but where the prices are very, very low. So it seems that with our tremendously high tobacco taxes in Minnesota, we are creating nefarious activities that now we seem to need to control. Are you supporting the governor's 11 tobacco cops in his budget proposal?
Mr. Chair, I'd have to let the Department of Revenue speak to that, but we do support the Department of Revenue in fully exercising their authority to enforce the tobacco tax.
Okay. Thank you very much. To Mr. Schaefer, does the American Cancer Society support banning cigarettes?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My answer is going to sound very similar to Ms. Moylan, and so the American Cancer Society adopts policies based upon the science available. We know right now there's really three approaches: raising the price, smoke-free laws, and investing in tobacco cessation efforts.
You rehearsed that, didn't you? You guys are good. You're good. Very good. Okay. What's your position, Mr. Schaefer, on the in the governor's proposed budget, the 11 tobacco cops?
Mr. Chair, we would want to defer back to the Department of Revenue and explain kind of the need. What I think would be good to point out, though, was that the revenues from the tobacco tax increase actually exceeded what I believe the projection was. I want to say it was about $30 million. In addition to that, more importantly to our organizations, fewer people are using tobacco, fewer people are smoking. There's a decline. We're breaking that cycle of addiction in our state, and we're asking to keep that momentum going forward.
Thank you, Mr. Schaefer. Just for members' information, as mayor of Preston back in the 80s, I was the first mayor to ban cigarette machines. That's a little known fact. I don't like smoking. We have many times doctors testifying how it's killing everybody, but yet nobody that's against tobacco will ban it. And so I question that. I had one very honest with me. He says, well, you're against smoking, you're against tobacco, well, let's just ban it. I banned cigarette machines 2 years ago in the 1980s. And the answer is, well, then we wouldn't have the revenues coming in to fund our programs. And I thought, well, that's interesting. We have testimony, not today, I'm not saying you folks, but testimony in the past that it's going to kill everybody, yet they won't ban it. And so there's kind of a disconnect there, but whatever. Okay, let's go to questions from members. Chair Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And mine's similar to the vein that you had on the cigarette smuggler enforcement folks that the Department of Revenue has requested as part of the governor's budget. Given the fact that there seems to be quite an uptick in smuggling, how does that play a role in your data that you use on whether people are truly ceasing to smoke if they are going the route of smuggling and purchasing their cigarettes that way? How do you account for that in your data? And, I mean, how could you track that? Can you give me a little better idea? Ms. Milana, I apologize, I can't say your last name. Is it Milanen or?
Moylanen.
Moylanen. If you could give me an idea, how do you really know when people are smuggling?
Ms. Moylanen.
Mr. Chair, Chair Anderson, thank you for the question. I'd like to, two parts. First of all, the Department of Revenue can talk more about the specifics around their data around smuggling. But the latest data that I saw was that it was estimated at 2.6 million. And that's out of over 600 million collected every year. So it is a relatively small problem. I think the Department of Revenue has done an excellent job enforcing and enforcing compliance with the law. And so I think that what you're hearing in the media is kind of overblowing the impact of smuggling. Not to say it's not a problem and that we should look into it and provide the resources to enforce the taxes properly, but I do think it is overinflated in the media. In terms of our data, we ask people about their cigarette buying purchases, and we incorporate that into the study.
Chair Anderson?
Well, Mr. Chair, so are you telling me that when you do the survey, the data, that people are admitting to you that they purchase cigarettes illegally, or I mean, what kind of data are you getting from them?
We ask, Mr. Chair, Chair Anderson, we do ask how purchases are made, but in terms of the smoking rate, that is incorporated. We know if people are saying they're quitting, that is what they're telling us. In terms of their purchasing behavior, we ask, have you changed your purchasing behavior? And then we learn about that as well. And for the most part, smokers who continue to smoke continue to buy their cigarettes out of convenience at the local convenience store.
Chair Anderson.
Mr. Chair, just last comment. You know, that's surprising to me because most people don't like to admit that they're committing an illegal act, even if it's to a group separate from government at all. So I'm surprised by that. I'd like to get more details on the data that you've collected if you could. But that,
absolutely.
Mr. Chair.
Absolutely.
Mr. Schaefer, to that point, or
Mr. Chair, what I would add is really the statistic that drives our organization's support of raising the price of tobacco products is really looking at that the percentage of youth smoking. We're down to 10.6%. So when we saw that number go down, we wrote that off. We would consider that as a success, a step in the right direction. In addition, the statistic that we're going from 18% of tobacco usage rate down to 14%. That's the number that's really going to drive our policies and drive our views on this subject.
Chair Anderson. Okay. Maybe to Ms. Moylan or Mr. Schaefer, you know, Utah and California have lower taxes than we do but have less smoking than we do. Why is that? Ms. Moylan?
Mr. Chair, I can't answer everything about that. I know that, you know, Utah's tradition of no smoking and drinking with the Mormon is with the Mormon religion is consistent, so that's one reason. And I think California has really led the way in other ways, too, with the first state having really smoke-free spaces, having invested a lot of resources in mass media to educate people about the harms of tobacco use. Those pieces have contributed to the lower smoking rate in California.
So the lower tax rate and lower, so that the higher tax rate does not necessarily mean lower smoking rates.
Mr. Chair,
Ms. Moylan,
the combination of high tobacco taxes, smoke-free spaces, and investments in prevention and cessation are really the three pillars that will create lower smoking rates. California has done that through two. Minnesota has done that through two as well. And we'd love to see all three of those be brought together to really see the maximum impact that we could have at creating a tobacco-free future.
Mr. Schaefer.
Mr. Chair, fun fact, I was actually born in Colville, Utah, and grew up just outside of Salt Lake. I would echo, that's right, you were born in Utah. It's a good state.
Wow. Utah Utes.
Utah Utes. Yeah. Root for the Utes, don't root for BYU.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
BYU, yeah, I forgot about them.
They've got a pretty good passing game, pretty good quarterback, played for the Bears not too long ago.
Okay, Representative.
Sure, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Schaefer.
If I may, apologize. A couple things about Utah. Keep in mind that they do have a pretty low tobacco usage rate, and a big piece of that can be attributed to the very high population of members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. In addition to that, it should be pointed out they're also a smoke-free state. They also raised their tobacco tax a few years ago, and also saw a substantial decrease in the level of use.
Thank you, Representative Simonson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I have a question for the testifiers, but before that I was just going to offer you that since you're asking the question about the ban, if you're looking for a co-author on that bill, I'd be happy to step up and do that. But my question is for the testifier, because I think that this might come up a little bit later, but can you shed some light on what's happening in Minnesota in terms of programs that are available for folks that might want to quit smoking? I think we oftentimes hear this argument that, you know, I can't quit, or I don't have the resources to help me quit. I can't afford to quit. My insurance doesn't cover a stop smoking program. Can you shed some light on what's happening here in Minnesota in terms of programs that are available for that?
Ms. Moylan.
Mr. Chair, Representative Simonson, thank you. Absolutely. When the tobacco tax went into effect in 2013, we wanted to make sure that all Minnesotans had access to free cessation help. So through Quit Plan Services, any Minnesotan can access free cessation services, smoking patches, gum, lozenges, free phone coaching, text messaging, email support. We really have one of the best suites of services available to smokers looking to quit and cut back in the country, and we're really proud of that. And many folks have taken advantage of that since the tax increase took effect.
Mr. Schaefer, to the Simonson question.
Mr. Chair, Representative Simonson, I'd echo Ms. Moylan answered that question. Well, the only thing I would add is right now Minnesota invests about $3.24 million, I believe it is, in tobacco cessation efforts through the Department of Health. And while on the other side of that, our friends within the tobacco industry, 2 years ago they spent about $150 million in marketing, so slight differential in numbers there.
Representative Simons.
Mr. Chair, just a quick follow-up. So do either of you have data, either be it anecdotal or empirical, that would show an uptick in the use of these free programs since we implemented this higher tobacco tax?
Ms. Moylan.
Mr. Chair and Representative Simonson, immediately after the tobacco tax took effect, calls to our quit line and logins to our help website went up by over 200% from the year before. So, yes, there we have had very much increased interest in use of the services because of the tax increase.
Mr. Schaefer.
I have nothing to add, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Simonson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Chair Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I am co-authoring this bill with you, Mr. Chair. I did put my name in, but I think Representative Simonson wants to author the ban bill is what I thought I heard. So, you know, phone a friend. I'm Ms. Moylan and Mr. Schaefer. I'm just curious. So, I mean, you've done some study on this. Certainly, we have an inflator on the tobacco tax. The last legislature and the governor, as we know, increased the tobacco tax on people who happen to smoke in Minnesota by $1.60 a pack, a full 130% increase in the tax for the poorest of the poor. And, you know, I was door knocking in trailer courts this last election, and, you know, you come to the trailer court door, and about every other one has a little table. It's usually about this big, and on the table is a it's a corn can, actually, and the label's torn off, and inside it's filled halfway with sand, and then there's tobacco butts up the rest of the way. And so I'm very, very, the experience has shown there's a high propensity of people within trailer courts to be smokers. And as I go around and talk to those folks there, and not all of them are poor, but the bulk of them are poor, and to see the oppression that this tax is placing on them and hear from those folks is very, very compelling, or at least it was for me. But I'm curious, how far how far does the tax need to go before everybody quits? I mean, you've certainly done some numbers. How far should those who want to raise this tax, how far up should it go?
Ms. Moylan?
Mr. Chair and Chair Drzewski, good question. I think we're open to looking at that and looking at new opportunities to continue to increase the price of tobacco to prevent kids from starting to smoke, but I don't have today a specific number about what that would be.
Mr. Schaefer?
I think, Mr. Chair, I would just add right now we're at 10.6 high school smoking use at the high school level, and then 14% across the state. How far when we get down to zero?
Chair Drzewski.
I don't hear a commitment from them, Mr. Chair, so thank you.
Well, Chair Drzewski, just to give you some perspective, several years ago I offered an amendment when they were looking at a dollar increase. I offered an amendment for $10 increase per pack, and that was voted down. So we know it's not $10. Chair Drzewski.
Well, Mr. Chair, I wonder at $10 how many smoking cops that the governor would want to bring forward.
I think
realizing tobacco tax in North Dakota is 44 cents and we'd be at $10, I think the fiscal disparity there is quite high.
Well, Chair Drzewski, I think that goes from 11 then as I extrapolate to about 324. So,
all right, 324 smoking cups. Thank you, Mr.
Yes.
Chair.
Chair Carlson.
Well, Mr. Chairman, you've kind of moved beyond it, but I was, one, going to compliment you on your comment about being the first mayor that banned the machines. Because it helped me recall a discussion one time, and I've been retired for many years from teaching, so this goes back quite a while, but smoking came up in one of my classes, and so I commented, well, it's against the law to purchase these cigarettes. Mr. Carlson, all we have to do is buy them out of a vending machine, and they actually named a couple, three businesses in North Minneapolis where some of them would go and buy their cigarettes. One of them happened to be a bowling alley, you know, where a lot of young people would gather and the machines were there and they could make the purchase. So at least the idea of having to, which we do now, have them go to a counter and have an adult that or a salesperson that they have to face and ask for those cigarettes, I think is helpful in reducing the purchase among young people. But I was going to comment, my dad was a World War II vet. He went into the war a non-smoker, and they got free cigarettes. And he came out literally, and part of it was due to his having served in Europe, and he was a prisoner of war held by the Germans. And at any rate, he came out of that a chain smoker. And his cause of death many years later dealt with respiratory problems, not cancer, but emphysema. And I'll always recall the last time he was at my house, he was carrying the oxygen tank as a result of that. And looking back, I always felt that those free cigarettes during World War II to the men and women that were serving contributed to his untimely death, because he was still relatively young, at least from the standpoint of the family history. His father lived to be 96, his uncle lived to be 102. Dad died in his early 70s, and it was all related to the smoking. So how we go about reducing the number of people smoke, I guess, is always going to be a debate, but I think anything that we can do to discourage smoking really has huge health ramifications and is a positive direction to go. And I guess I'm speaking against the bill in that regard.
Very kindly, thank you. That was okay, let's go to Chair Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wasn't going to mention this, but as long as we're talking about trailer courts, when I do my trailer courts, people have pretty well... Now, wait a minute. The people have pretty well quit smoking.
Trailer courts in Edina.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. But they have a large bucket there and it's splattered all around it, so they've taken up with that other evil, the wet in the little cans. But that's just a passing note. I just wanted to mention it. But what I was going to say is that the other night I was watching late night movie. Robert Mitchum was running his Dodge Charger across Georgia, I think it was, delivering moonshine, white lightning, whatever you want to call it. And making a lot of money, cash. No taxes, cash. So I'm wondering, if is it Oklahoma that has, I think I heard that, is it time to empty out the Dodge Charger and head for Georgia? Is it really worthwhile to say that we're, does anybody know how much money we're losing through, and can we make cost-effective arguments for 11 more, whatever they are?
Mr. Michael or Mr. could we bring down a resource, please?
Well,
you know, I don't think you take the old Dodge Charger to Georgia. I think you take a U-Haul to North Dakota. I think you could really make some good money.
Well, I heard, Mr. Chairman, I heard, I think it was Oklahoma, because they have such low prices. And they say that's the lowest in the country, or nearest. We don't want to go to California, so that's close. But a serious question is, how much leakage in the tax system are we now experiencing with people running the stuff from wherever they're getting it, across the border? Or
Mr. Cummins, please state your name and who you represent for the record. Please turn then to Chair Earhart's question.
Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Paul Cummings, and I'm the tax policy manager for the Minnesota Department of Revenue. I think one of the things that this conversation has brought forward is the problem of some cigarette tobacco smuggling. It's actually mostly around tobacco, and not so much around cigarettes, but it's mostly around tobacco. And what we're finding is that people, we found anecdotes, and we're also finding an increased amount of seizures in the times in which the Department of Revenue has gone out to audit folks, and how much of the product it happens to be untaxed. So what we're finding here is we're finding that there does end up being an unlevel playing field amongst many of the retailers all across the state who are playing by the rules and buying taxed or stamped tobacco or cigarettes. And then we also have folks who are selling tobacco that is unstamped or untaxed. And that becomes an unlevel playing field. I will work to get some statistics back to the committee on how has our seizure rate increased over time. I know that we are finding anecdotes even of pallets of untaxed merchandise that is coming across the border. And so this isn't necessarily smoking cops. These are just folks to try and ensure that there's a level playing field across the state. And what are the various mechanisms that we can do that? And right now, you know, even yesterday we met with the wholesalers and the retailers about how can we develop a partnership and what are the best ideas in terms of trying to reduce this amount of smuggling, because I think that's in all of our best interest. There is the discussion of what should the rate be or what should the inflator be, but I think we can all say that we don't want to have two separate marketplaces for goods in the state related to tobacco or cigarettes. So I'll stand for questions, and I'll also tell you, Mr. Chair, that I'd be happy to get back to you with more information about this. This is something that was obviously in the governor's budget and something that we really do care about.
And thank you, Mr. Cummings, and Chair Earhart still has the floor, but I would just ask, okay, when I read through the governor's, because I'm carrying the bill for these tobacco company.
And, Mr. Chair, it is a great bill. So
fine
you,
piece of legislation.
You offered a great bill.
Fine piece of legislation. But, okay, I did say tobacco cops because as I read through, that's kind of what it looked like to me.
That's right.
How should I properly refer to those in what I'm carrying my bill? What are you calling them?
I mean, there's various individuals within the agency who will be helping to audit and also provide assistance across the state in terms of people who are even spotting smuggling. One of the most helpful resources was how can retailers who are playing by the rules across the state contact the department in order to try and tell us about places in which there is noncompliance. And that was another discussion that we began to say, what sort of resources would we be able to employ in an area where a retailer is saying, gosh, you know, a competitor down the road is selling untaxed product. And right now, you know, we have limited resources, and that's why we're coming forward with some enhanced capacity in order to deal with this problem.
Mr. Cummings, should I call them tobacco resources?
Tobacco resources would be fine, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Okay, Chair Earhart still has the floor. Chair Earhart?
I just wanted to mention, Mr. Chairman, that usually when we expect to return for extra staff over there, we set a goal for them. Some years it was $100 million, and we gave them extra enforcement powers and more labor to do that. So it would only be fair to get a figure or set a figure of what we expect those folks to return for what they're I don't think it's $100 million, but you know, maybe it's 50 or something. That's all.
Thank you, Chair Hart. Thank you. Mr. Cummings?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, in previous compliance initiatives, there has been additional resources given to the agency in order to audit or collect various revenues. And so I know that that is a system in which we have given information back to the legislative committees on how we've done that. In this particular case, we do anticipate some revenue coming in either through increased voluntary compliance and also through various audits or seizures. And there is a small amount of revenue within our fiscal note, and I can pass that along to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Ahern. Okay, I'm going to go, let's see here. I have Barrett, Moline, Wills, Swadzinski, and Erickson, and then we're going to need to get to the folks that support my bill. Okay, Vice Chair Barrett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the testifiers, first of all, thanks for what you guys do. I know I didn't necessarily mean Mr. Cummings, but thank you for what you do as well.
I'll thank Mr. Cummings for what he does. Mr. Schaefer, why don't you join us next to Ms. Moylan? You want him to stay?
No.
Okay, I guess not.
But as a
thank you, Mr. Cummings.
Here's a resource.
Here's a resource. That's
and I appreciate that.
Vice Chair Barrett.
No, as it relates to your goal, your mission, your goal obviously is to make Minnesota healthier, and I appreciate the fact that you both do that. Your goals are noble, and your work is commended by me. So you mentioned a couple numbers earlier regarding youth survey information related to smoking. And I wrote down the numbers, but I didn't write down the dates because I heard them too quickly. Can you just restate that? I think in 1 year it was 18.1%, and the next year period of time it was 10.6%. Could you just restate that if you wouldn't mind?
Ms. Moylan, then?
Mr. Chair and Representative Barrett, the high school students who smoked cigarettes in the past 30 days dropped from 18.1% in 2011 to 10.6% in 2014.
Vice Chair Barrett.
Thank you for that. So I must be looking at a different survey because I'm looking at a survey from the Minnesota Student Survey, and it's sponsored by the Department of Education, Department of Health, Department of Human Services, and Public Safety. And the information I have is that students who smoked cigarettes in the past 30 days in 2001, it was 18.7%. In 2013, it was 7.2%. So that's a 13-year period in which smoking dropped from 18.7 to 7.2, which is a wonderful thing in my mind. At the same time, though, those who drank alcohol over that over a similar period dropped from 29.3 to 14.2, 29.3 in 2001, 14.2 in 2013. So I'm wondering if that information is accurate, and if it is, why have kids smoked less and drank less in that 13-year period, if you know?
Ms. Milan?
Mr. Chair, Representative Barrett, I can't speak to the alcohol portion, and I would really encourage you to talk with the Department of Health about the two data sets. But I can speak to what we know works in terms of reducing youth smoking rates. And we've talked about that here. It's the combination of keeping tobacco prices high, smoke-free bars and restaurants, smoke-free spaces has a big impact on reducing youth initiation and youth smoking rates, and having really good education and mass media and prevention services available. So it's a combination of those three pieces that will continue to drive down youth smoking.
Vice Chair Barrett.
So related to that, I'm sure you're familiar with the term perception of risk as it relates to activities that especially youth think are risky or they think are not risky, and the fact that there's an inverse trend generally. If a student perceives something as risky, contrary to what parents might think, they actually do less of it. And if they think something is not risky, they will do more of it. There is a correlation there which speaks to education and the fact that society has done a good job in many cases of information education that allows kids to know about the risk of things. Smoking being one, smoking has gone down a lot in 13 years, not just from 2011 to 2014, but sure, from 2001 to 2013, it went down dramatically, as has alcohol use, as has the use of hard drugs. I don't know what the cost of hard drugs are. I've never used them. I don't know. I'm sure there are no taxes on them. And alcohol as well. I don't think there's been an increase in the alcohol tax that would cause a decline in use. So I would say, from my research, the things that I've looked at, that perception of risk is highly related to youth activities. And I'm not sure that the price necessarily has done in 1 year what we're being told it has. It could have happened, but I know this trend is ongoing based on what kids perceive to be a risky behavior. So, thank you.
Thank you. Chair Garofalo?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I would just ask for a little bit of common sense from members of the committee. Right now, based on our current laws, a carton of cigarettes that is purchased in North Dakota and is brought from Grand Forks to East Grand Forks immediately becomes worth $24 more. That is, the government has created a black market for this product, and while I don't think we need to have the tobacco taxes of North Dakota, we do need to be aware of the fact that every time we automatically increase this, we are creating an additional financial incentive for the black market to develop. And again, just one carton of cigarettes going across the border is $24 more. And so I think the intentions of this policy when it was enacted had the best of intentions, but I just would ask members to be a little bit more aware of that. To Mr. Michael, with regards to the e-cigarettes, and I do not know the answer to this question, but do the e-cigarettes, I know there's some linkage between e-cigarettes and traditional tobacco taxes. Is there an automatic inflator on the e-cigarettes as well?
Mr. Michael?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Garofalo, e-cigarettes are taxed as other tobacco products, and that tax is a percentage of the wholesale price. So it's set at 95% of the wholesale price. As prices rise, that tax rises automatically. The indexing in the cigarette tax is indexed to the average retail price of cigarettes, so it's sort of indexed in an equivalent manner.
Okay. Thank you.
Chair Garofalo.
Okay.
Representative Moline.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And it sounds like the department, I don't know where Mr. Cummings went, is going to get some more information on the smuggling. I did think the request for 11 new people to enforce that was a little excessive. So I think it would be important for us as a committee to actually understand better how taxation is tied to smuggling. I actually just saw an article yesterday that I admittedly saw on Twitter. Rachel Stassenberger had tweeted it out, but it was an article just yesterday about the top 10 states for smuggling tobacco, and Minnesota was not in that top 10 list. Utah and California, which you had mentioned as low taxation states, actually were in that list, which surprised me. Other states that we would expect to be in that list, such as New York, which has the highest tax on tobacco, was also in that list. Wisconsin, I think, I'm just thinking off the top of my head. I can email the article to the committee, but I would be more interested in knowing from House Research or the department if there's, you know, some more information on smuggling rates and whether or not it's tied to taxation. I think that that's important for us to know whether or not smuggling rates will in fact go up due to taxation. And then, you know, additionally, aside from, you know, whether or not I agree with your bill, Mr. Chair, I just to comment to Representative Drazkowski, that argument that we're sort of protecting poor people by keeping their cigarette prices low has always just sort of bothered me. I would agree that tobacco tax is regressive. It does impact low-income individuals more than middle or upper-class individuals. So it is a regressive tax. But I think the argument that we're sort of protecting poor people by keeping their cigarette taxes low is just a little disingenuous. And, you know, my parents actually lived in a trailer park, and my dad was a smoker at that time. He too started while he was in the military getting those free cigarettes. You know, when my brother was a toddler, my mom was pregnant with me, they were able to move out of the trailer park and purchase a home. And that wasn't because my dad was smoking cheap cigarettes. It's because they were educated and provided, you know, other economic opportunities in order to sort of climb the ladder. And fortunately, he was able to quit smoking when I was in grade school, so I'm lucky enough to still have him around. But, you know, I would just say that that argument that we're sort of protecting poor people by keeping their smokes cheap is a little disingenuous to those who are working hard to climb the ladder and don't have the opportunities presented to them. So that was the only comment I wanted to make, and I know we've heard that argument in the past. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Moline. And the article you referred to, the Stassenberg article, the cigarette tax had not, in Minnesota, the increase had not been fully implemented yet. I think it went into effect in July, and she goes through 13. So we don't have the effect. I'd be interested to see something from 14 to see the top 10 states. I don't know if anybody has that information, but thank you, Representative Moline.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, and I would agree with you that I think it's important to see the most recent numbers, but, you know, Utah and California were on that list from 2013, and you know, they have some of the lowest taxes, and so despite them having some of the lowest taxes, they were still on the list of being the highest in tobacco smuggling. So I think that just finding out the relationship that there would be more important for us to know as committee members.
Okay, thank you, Representative Moline. And maybe since you're both from Utah, Representative Drazkowski, your name is used.
My name is invoked, yes, Mr. Chair. So I would just encourage members of the committee to do what I did and walk around the trailer park and talk to people and talk to, again, there's people in the trailer parks who are not poor, but I'll tell you, the bulk of them are. And when you talk to them about the impact of this tax on their life, because I did, it was very compelling to me that indeed the oppression of this tax is something at the front of their mind. So, Representative Moline, I beg to differ, but thank you for the discussion.
Oh, you're doing so good, Chair Drazkowski. Now you said Representative Moline. Representative Moline. you just about made it.
Well, Mr. Chair, maybe just goes to philosophical differences. I'm not disagreeing with Representative Drazkowski that this is a regressive tax and it impacts lower-income people, you know, more than others. But there are so many other variables when it comes to people being able to climb the economic ladder and to improve their quality of life and economic standing that, you know, I think limiting it to, you know, we're protecting poor people by keeping their cigarettes cheap is just a little disingenuous to the, you know, economic issues surrounding low-income Minnesotans, and that's, you know, my only comment. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Moline. Okay, I have quite a list here. I think we're going to be cutting people off in this, and when I do that, this bill, it'd be laid over for possible inclusion, so we'll have, the committee still has possession of it, but my list is getting longer as my time is getting shorter. Does anyone have questions for the testifiers themselves? We do. Okay. So we'll go to 15 after. I want to keep it about equal as far as time goes. I know that the folks that support the bill have brought some folks in from some distance, I believe. Okay. So with that, first of all, we have to get down this now. Utah Utes, what's Brigham Young's name? Mr. Schaefer?
Brigham Young's. Mr. Chairman, Brigham Young is Brigham Young's name.
They're their team name.
Oh, the Cougars.
What kind of Cougars?
Mr. Chair, everyone just calls them the Cougars.
Cosmos the Cougars is their official mascot. Just pretty good, pretty good. Okay, with that, let's go to Representative Wills.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll be brief. I just wanted to respond to a few members' comments in referring to trailer parks. And in talking to my constituents, I have learned that they prefer them to be called mobile home parks out of respect. And I just wanted to raise that point and keep that in mind for our constituents who live in that situation. So thank you.
Representative Wills, I call them manufactured housing. And is it true that most people that buy their cigarettes buy them from gas stations that also serve gas station food?
Mm-hmm.
Is that, are most of them sold at gas stations?
Mr. Chair.
Ms. Moylanen?
Mr. Chair, most cigarettes are bought on a convenience at a local convenience store with or without gas.
Okay, thank you. The gentleman from Lyon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just that this maybe goes a bit out of the bounds of this committee, but we were talking about enforcement and from a retail setting for illegal cigarette sales. Obviously, these are being part, and it was brought up by Representative Groffler, who is no longer in the room, about North Dakota and coming across the border. How does the law affect individuals? So say we're not in a retail location. Maybe it's one guy, you know, sending $50 or $100 with a buddy that's going to North Dakota to gamble, and he brings them back into the work site, mm-hmm. and they get distributed from that point. How does the law affect, this is obviously maybe from a tax perspective, but an enforcement perspective as well, how is that viewed and you know, where does that sit? So sorry to expand the conversation when we
Well, maybe we could have Mr. Cummings come up here because that's a very good question. So we've all seen the pictures of the U-Hauls with crates or pallets or what do you want to of cigarettes. What about the guy that just goes to North Dakota for vacation, brings a few cartons back, and gives them away? Mr. Cummings.
Mr.
Gentleman from Lyon, are we giving them away or are we selling them? Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Paul Cummings, and I'm the tax policy manager at the Minnesota Department of Revenue. Mr. Chair, because there's many circumstances, whether it's personal use or for a friend, I'm going to phone a friend, and I'm going to get back to the committee, and maybe I can even do that during the committee hearing here. I just don't want to make sure that I'm giving inaccurate information, but obviously some of the issues that we've seen are not necessarily just a carton or two. They're larger than that. But I am going to get back to the committee, and hopefully I can do that in the next few minutes.
Mr. Cummings, if you could, it's an interesting question. I mean, they're going and buying and bringing them back. Mr. Michael, to that point.
Mr. Chairman, for personal use, you're allowed to bring one carton of cigarettes and have it in your possession and not pay the use tax. But that's for your personal use. If you're selling them to someone else, then you've crossed the line into becoming an unlicensed retailer of cigarettes.
Gentleman from Lyon. Okay. Chair Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think I'm going to ask this question of Mr. Cummins. Don't you think that the more we tax, the more we impose upon our retailers, and I'm thinking of the clerks, who wait on customers ahead of me at the gas station or the convenience store, we're making them responsible for being law enforcement as well. And so now you need more employees at revenue to enforce, but I think we're also saying to the retailers, oh, no, now you have to be cops as well. And they tell me that really is, it's an anxiety for them and a stress that we're placing on them. Because most of the sales do occur at their counters. And would you comment on that, please?
Sure. Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, members of the committee, in terms of when retailers buy product, they do need to buy product that is taxed,
yes,
or stamped, and I think that's where the position is. So, as they're selling it, they do need to make sure it's taxed or whether it's stamped. So I don't, in terms of each transaction, they just need to make sure that the tax is paid on it when it comes from the wholesaler or whoever they're buying it from. I do know one of the things that had been brought up yesterday is that, you know, sometimes retailers might have the anxiety to say, I'm playing by the rules, and yet there are people who aren't playing by the rules that are down the street, and I know that there might be some anxiety there, like, you know, if I'm playing by the rules, but, you know, maybe my neighbor is not, then that may cause an anxiety, and I think the retailers are going to be coming up, and they can talk a little bit about that as well.
Thank you, Mr.
Okay, I'm going to wrap it up here for the folks that have concerns with Chair Carlson, and then if Mr. Dunham, Olson, and Rush could get ready to come down. Chair Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think mine can be just a yes or no answer from Mr. Cummings, being that we've wandered a bit from the bill itself, but when we're talking about smuggling, something that came to mind the counterfeiting of the stamps. And just yes or no, is that an issue? Is counterfeiting a part of this problem as well?
Mr. Cummings?
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, members of the committee, in terms of the issues that we have, that we're trying to bring forward in the cigarette smuggling package, that's not an issue that we're advancing at this time. I think it's always an issue that we are thinking about and, you know, making sure. I know that this is something that the wholesalers take very seriously in terms of trying to ensure that the product is paid and stamped.
Mr. Chairman, I could do a follow-up, but I'll just comment.
No, go ahead. We're
well, or advancing at this time kind of implies that there may be an issue there that at some point in the future may be discussed, and I was just curious as to whether that's a problem or not. It sounds like it may be at a future discussion time. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Carlson. If we could please have a Mr. Dunham, Olson, and Rush come up. And Mr. Schaefer, Ms. Moylanen, thank you very much. And Mr. Cummings, you may want to stick around as a resource here.
Very good.
I think we'll be able to do pretty equal time here. Okay, who would like to start out?
I think I am, Mr. Chairman.
Please state your name and who represents the record, please, sir.
Yeah, my name is John Dunham, and I'm managing partner with John Dunham and Associates.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you so much for the opportunity to speak today, and thank you for this wonderful weather here in St. Paul. It's a very nice break from the balmy above zero temperatures that we've had to endure in New York City, so I'm quite happy to be here. As I said, my name is John Dunham, and I'm here to offer the testimony to the committee today on behalf of Altria Client Services, its affiliates Philip Morris USA, John Middleton Company, U.S. Smokeless Tobacco, regarding HF 700. My comments and opinions today are based on my 30 years of experience working as an economist, nearly 20 years of those studying policies around taxation, particularly excise taxes. I'm currently managing partner of John Dunham Associates, and we're an economic consulting firm based in New York City, and we service a wide variety of clients in a wide variety of businesses, mostly non-tobacco related. Prior to that, I was an economist with Philip Morris, where I worked on literally hundreds, maybe thousands of projects related to the taxation of tobacco and beer. I was also an economist in New York City and New York State prior to that, and I'm really familiar with the issues surrounding production taxation of tobacco products. I'm really here today to provide the committee with some insight and also with an update of a report that I wrote last year entitled The Economic Consequences of the Recent Cigarette Tax Increase in Minnesota. I want to follow up just a little bit on our conclusions of that report and discuss what some of the most recent data show. Just to begin with, if I may, in June of last year, Rob Walker of the firm Orzechowski & Walker and I wrote a report examining the impact of the 130% increase in Minnesota's cigarette excise tax. We found that the excise tax increase had shifted taxable sales to neighboring low-tax jurisdictions, and that the provision that would increase the rate annually would further this trend. We used both state-level sales data from departments of revenue, as well as a unique store-level series that allowed us to look directly at same-store sales on both sides of the border before and after the tax increase. We found that border communities in Minnesota were experiencing per capita sales losses of about 27% to 42%, depending on the border we looked at. In fact, per capita sales in Minnesota County, in Minnesota counties bordering North Dakota, were just 13% of those in neighboring counties across the state line. Per capita sales in Minnesota's border regions as a whole had fallen by 30.1% in the aftermath of the tax increase, and this drop in sales was 50% larger than the estimated 19.8% reduction statewide that was attributable to the 130% tax increase. So looking at new data, how did our models at that time perform? Well, we projected that overall taxable sales in Minnesota would fall by about 21% as a result of the tax increase. Looking at actual reported taxable sales between July 2013 and October 2014, which is the last month that we were able to get data for, sales are actually off by 26% in absolute terms. They're down by about 20% from the expected trend values. And you have to understand cigarette sales fall in this country by about 3 or 4% a year just because time goes on, not because of anything to do with tax policy. Now, since they're down by about 20% and we expected 21%, I think we're really amazingly close considering that there are a huge number of factors that contribute to taxable cigarette sales in any given state. When we completed the analysis, we suspected that the net change in really across jurisdictional sales, we call them cross-border sales in the trade, but it's everything from smuggling to casually, you know, somebody working in North Dakota that buys their cigarettes there. We estimated that that cigarettes consumed by Minnesota's adult residents purchased in other jurisdictions would increase by about 11.43 million packs annually. And we looked at the most recent taxable sales data from just the bordering states, and we found an increase in expected sales. Again, this is above the trend, because there's always a trend downward in every state. We found an increase in expected sales above that trend of 9.3% in North Dakota, 6.2% in South Dakota, 3.8% in Wisconsin. Iowa sales following the tax increase are slightly below trend at about 97.8% of that expected value. So if I just look at those four states, and again, cross-border, cross-jurisdictional is a lot bigger than that. If we look at those states alone, sales in border states are running at about 12 million packs per year above expectations. Now, there's a lot of reasons for this, but a big part is due from higher purchases by Minnesota's adult consumers. The bottom line is that our predictions related to the July 2013 tax increase were really pretty good. And I would expect our model of the effects of the annual increases that HF 700 is addressing are probably in line as well. In that earlier report, we suggested that we called it the accelerator provision, would lead to tax increases about 9.3 cents in the first year and rise to about 10 cents per pack in the following 3 years. We predicted that that increase would lead to about 938,000 packs of additional cross-border sales by fiscal 2017, and there would be additional job losses primarily in retail outlets and like convenience stores and food stores that sell cigarettes. Overall, we've predicted the state's economy would be nearly 2.3% smaller as a result of this tax provision, and that would only rise as the taxes increased. In its analysis of this bill, the Department of Revenue reported that the 2015 increase, and you just approved it right here, was slightly smaller than what we forecast, just about 7 cents. And that reflects lower than expected inflation in the market. Our model suggests the 7 cent increase will cost the state about 360,000 packs in net cross-border sales. And by fiscal 2018, this provision is going to increase the gap with North Dakota by nearly up to nearly $3 a pack. Now, taxable sales in a given state are highly reactive to excise tax rates. And that's because the retail market for tobacco is unlike almost any other. In fact, one really has to think about cigarette retailing as an extension of state government itself. Almost like what they call control states in the wine and spirits trade. Really, tobacco retailers are agents to the state government. Now let's consider the market in this region. Minnesota imposes that cigarette excise tax with the combined sales tax. It's actually a little higher than this. I had about 341 when we did this when we did this study. It's a little higher now. And we add in the settlement payments, the tobacco settlement payments, it equals about 51.7% of the price of cigarettes. The tax percentage in neighboring Wisconsin is about 45.5%. South Dakota is 36.3%, and Iowa is 34.4%. Now, other states impose lower costs. The overall state percentage of the price of cigarettes in North Dakota is just 21.9% of the average retail of the average price to the retailer. And in Missouri, which is really quite nearby, it's the lowest tax state in the country, it's 17.2%. So, you know, Pack and Marlboros, Winston, Newports, they're exactly the same if they're sold in Duluth or in Superior. It's the same product if it's sold in a convenience store here in St. Paul or if it's sold in Jefferson City or Fargo. And that means that a consumer in this state is faced with a whole lot of different prices that they could buy their products at. And they're going to, you know, if they can buy a product here for $8 and across in North Dakota for just $4.50, they're going to shop with their feet. And that's why this state and all high tax states lose sales over time. You know, for example, my city, I live in New York City, the jurisdiction with the highest taxes in the country. And it's estimated that New York City's lost about 60% of its sales to other jurisdictions. 60% of its sales. Prior to the tax increase, and I think you mentioned, one of the representatives mentioned this report, the Tax Foundation, which is a Washington-based think tank, estimated that 24.4% of all cigarettes consumed in Minnesota were already purchased from other jurisdictions. And again, this could be other states, Native American smoke shops, it could be military bases, it could be duty-free stores, it could be Canada. You know, and Minnesota right now ranks seventh in terms of its tax rate. So this state is going to continue to lose sales, it's going to continue to lose jobs, and continue to lose economic activity to other states. And this is something you all recognize with the other bill that you've discussed today, that there's a lot of unintended consequences. Right now, you're examining a bill that's going to provide 11 additional auditors to help collect taxes, something that's going to cost over $1 million a year. But honestly, more auditors are going to do little to stop the flow of both legitimate cross-border sales as well as illegally smuggled products. Minnesota residents traveling, for example, through the Cincinnati airport, which happens to be located in Covington, Kentucky, can bring back cigarettes on their way home to Minneapolis. Or they can legitimately purchase cigarettes in Fargo on the way to and from a job in North Dakota. All of these are part of this cross-border sales phenomena, and all will help to reduce the number of taxable sales here in Minnesota. And little's going to be changed by hiring 11 more tax auditors. So in summary, it appears the predictions that we made related to extremely high cigarette tax rates in Minnesota have come to pass. And these high tax rates have had and will continue to have a substantial economic impact in the state and will hamper your ability to raise needed new revenues. This is particularly true if tax rates in Minnesota continue to rise further and further above the regional average. And again, I thank you so much for letting me come here to enjoy your wonderful sunshine, and I'm here to answer any questions about the tobacco market that you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Dunn. We're going to go to testimony first before we go to questions, because I know some folks have traveled from a distance, and we want to make sure we get your testimony on the record. So, Mr. Olson, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Brady Olson. I own Brady's Service Center in Moorhead, Minnesota. I'm right on exit 1 of the Minnesota border to Fargo. I'm within a mile of other C-stores in Fargo. Since this tax came into being, I basically lost about 80% of my sales to Fargo. Now, it maybe has come back probably to maybe 60 or 70%, because I have regular customers that come to me no matter what it costs, because they like my store. You know, in 2003 and 2005, you know, Minnesota upped the cig tax, and we dealt with the anger of the public. My cashiers dealt with it. Okay. They dealt with the anger again in 2013. You know, I get people that come in, and, you know, they blow in from wherever they're, whatever state they're at, and they're like, holy buckets, how come it's so expensive? And all you can say to them is, well, it's welcome to Minnesota. It's the tax that Minnesota created, and we have to deal with it, you know. You know, it's not fair to my cashiers to have to deal with angry people that are mad because I can go over to Fargo for half the price. then you have to go. You know, that's all you can say to them. You know, I think that, you know, I support this 700 bill because it affects my business. You know, we're already in a short with the gas tax, even though we have Moe's Law in place. And when you talk about enforcement of the minimum markup law, I'm the only guy in Moorhead that keeps my price above the minimum markup law. And I file reports to the state, and it's all on deaf ears. So I don't know what these legal people are going to do about the confiscated or the, you know, the counterfeit cigarettes.
I wrote the law on minimum markup for gas. Sorry.
Thank you, sir.
Now, you're supporting about half the bill, so you can talk all you'd like.
Okay. I'll take questions, I guess. You
okay,
know.
Before we do that, we'll go to the last testifier, then sure. We'll go to questions. Thank you, Mr. Olson.
Thank you.
Are you a spud or a dragon?
I'm a Grover.
A what?
Oh, Grover. Yes, good for
you. Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'll have to look that one up. Okay, Mr. Rush, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please. And thank you for those 7-cent coupons. I just really like those.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Good morning. My name is Steve Rush. I'm the Director of Government Relations for Holiday Companies. We are a privately held Bloomington-based convenience store company. And we have over 300 corporate and franchise convenience stores through the state of Minnesota. And we employ 4,000 Minnesota residents. And we've been in business for about 90 years. A lot of my testimony will be a little bit repetitive, so I'll try to be brief. Given a 130% increase in the excise tax, Minnesota is simply uncompetitive on tobacco with border states. In checking pricing a few days ago on a carton of Marlboros, Minnesota, we have to charge a consumer about $80. That's about $10 more than what would be paid for the same carton in Wisconsin. It's about $19 higher than South Dakota, and it's an eye-popping $30 plus in North Dakota. This price disparity is causing us to lose a significant amount of traffic to border stores, and Mr. Dunham's testimony is quite accurate in the numbers that he's citing in there. We have about 9 convenience stores in Duluth, the greater Duluth area. We've lost an awful lot of traffic to Superior. Now, we do have 2 stores over there, and they've experienced a very significant sales increase over in Superior. For our metro or east metro locations like Stillwater or Bayport, we've seen a similar trend here, very significant sales losses, and those sales are moving over across the border to areas like St. Croix Falls. In fact, one of my competitors in St. Croix Falls, I believe, closed in Taylor's Falls, given the traffic leaving the state. Doing business in Moorhead and tobacco is just, it's very difficult, and Brady explained that very well. We have 2 stores there. The numbers that Brady was citing in terms of sales decreases are absolutely accurate. For South Dakota, we have a store in Ortonville right on the border, very similar sales losses to what's happened in Duluth. It's just simply evaporating. What we're asking for here today is simply the removal of the inflator on the excise tax. There is an inflation adjustment already on the sales tax. That's done annually through a survey by the Department of Revenue. So there is already an inflation adjustment on tobacco. And we should emphasize that for the convenience store industry, the tobacco category is very important to us. It represents about 40% of our in-store sales, not including petroleum, but in-store sales. So finally, the annual adjustment to inflation to the excise tax is something that we would ask that you stop. The problem is bad enough as it is, and we'd like to stop it now before the situation becomes even more untenable for retailers. And with the other 2 gentlemen I'm with, I'm happy to take any questions, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Rush. I have Chair Lencheski first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess it's hard to formulate a question, and Mr. Chair, you know that this, and the testifier should know, that I am the person who carried that bill, and I'm the chief author of that bill. I didn't just put it in the omnibus tax bill. I'm actually the chief author of the bill, and yes, it was a 130% increase with an inflation, and I still think that's the right thing to do. Mr. Chair, since you are the author of this bill, I can kind of guess if this might be in the omnibus tax bill. So,
Chair Lachesky, nothing personal.
So, you know, might be futile, but, you know, I just would remind people, you know, this isn't novel. Governor Pawlenty did the same thing at a different time during a deficit. And historically, when we raise the tobacco taxes, Minnesota tends to go first, and then the other states catch up. So as states start to go through deficit again sometime in the future, and they will, I mean, the economy's good in the country now, I will predict all those surrounding states will raise their cigarette tax. That's kind of how it's played out time after time. It's sort of someone goes first and everyone else plays catch up. So I know in the short term, there is absolutely, Mr. Chair, this competitive border issue. And I understand that, and that's, you know, I think part of the policy discussion we have to have, and Representative Drazkowski and Representative Moline talked about, you know, it's a regressive tax, it hurts the poor. Absolutely right. It's absolutely true. Yet I think tobacco and related diseases hurt poor and all income levels more than paying the tax. But, you know, I guess I would just, you know, I'd ask members here to just think about as you go forward on this, you know, if we're going to make tobacco more affordable, which is what the bill does, it makes lowering the price, you know, do we really think health care costs are going to go up or down in the state budget? The real, in my mind, and the reason I carried the inflator, and, you know, it took some convincing with the Senate and the governor to want to do that. So, I think, Mr. Chair, you know, you might have some sympathetic ears in the Senate, is my guess. But, you know, there is a reason for that. I mean, I think politically we know it's really hard to raise a tax around here in the first place, so you kind of only do it every once in a while, and you might as well get it right and get the inflation piece in there. And why would that be? Well, you know, there's a huge state cost to the use of tobacco. And half of our general fund is health and human services. And this tax does not begin to cover the cost to all taxpayers, whether they smoke or not, in health and human services. We all pay higher premiums for smoking. We all pay higher health care costs. We raise taxes on all of our constituents or don't, but in the HHS budget, that's going to come forward by the chair of that committee, and a big part of the cost of that bill is tobacco use. And so why not make the users who are creating these increased costs pay a little more of them? Not all of them. We're still subsidizing smokers, but it's having them pick up a little more of the tab, and it's not to be punitive to smokers. It's because it is a huge health care cost, and I think the discussion, you know, we're kind of off what the point is. We can fall into the taxes, but it really was to improve health of the citizens of Minnesota and to reduce health care costs. And I think there's broad consensus in Minnesota for those objectives. As the person who raised the cigarette tax, well, by a big amount, you know, find me the data that shows Minnesotans opposed that tax increase. Been very popular. Because we're all picking up the costs of people who are smoking, and tobacco is causing a lot of harm to a lot of people. And so, you know, I am, Mr. Chair, you know, you asked the banning question. You know, I'm kind of with Representative Simonson on that, but, you know, I'm realistic about what happens. You know, we have laws against consuming other things, and it doesn't completely stop, you know, that. But, you know, I just hope, you know, Mr. Chair, and again, it's probably futile, I hope you will think long and hard about placing this piece of legislation in your omnibus tax bill. It really does pay for itself. As hard as people think tax cuts pay for themselves, well, getting people off tobacco also pays for itself in the HHS budget. And, you know, I guess I'd hope to have a conversation with the chair of that committee to think about what will the health care costs related to tobacco use in Minnesota do if we reduce the price of tobacco in Minnesota. And my guess is even that chair will say it's going to go up. So appreciate you allowing me to try to persuade you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Chair Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And a question or three for Mr. Dunn. I assume it's Dr. Dunn?
No, sir.
Oh, okay.
From Columbia, right?
I have an MBA from Columbia, yes, sir.
Okay. What's home of the Mighty Lions?
I wouldn't call them mighty.
Got me on that one.
Okay.
Chair Dabney to Mr. Dunham.
It's just hard to follow up on that sometimes. Mr. Dunn, the
you focused in some of your comments, and I didn't follow your methodology entirely, but even if you sat down and explained it to me one-on-one, I probably wouldn't follow your methodology entirely. How did you factor in the fact that there was a significant differential in tobacco taxes between Minnesota and North Dakota previous to Chair Lincheski's bill going into law?
Mr. Dunham?
Sir, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, sir. We model this as a what we call a demand model. You know, if you think about any consumer, any adult consumer in any state faces 51, 52 really different prices for the same product. And they're gonna react to those prices in different ways depending on how difficult it is to obtain the product. So if you're a consumer in Minnesota, chances are you're not gonna go to Hawaii to purchase a lot of cigarettes. But you may get cigarettes either smuggled to you or casually buy them from a low-tax state like Missouri. And we build a model that balances all of those states together. So if I change a tax in one state, it affects all of the states. And when we change a tax in Minnesota, it changes the demand functions in all of the states. And that's how we come up to our estimates. And I have to say, I've been doing this, as I said, for an ungodly long time. And our models have almost always, they're extremely accurate. When I worked for Philip Morris, I actually did the tobacco forecast for about 10 states. Because honestly, and your state revenue department does an excellent job in forecasting these revenues, an excellent job compared to most states. But honestly, this is a little tax. And these guys, they worry about big, you know, big chunky taxes. They don't really worry about these little taxes that much. So we built these models, you know, this was our life, and this is what we built. And that's why, you know, it's a pretty good model. Does that answer your question, sir?
Chair Dabney?
Mr. Chair, interesting insight, Mr. Dunham. Somewhat. But what I guess, if I caught your initial testimony, you stated that there was about a $9 million pack increase, not dollars, but packs of cigarettes increase in purchases in the Dakotas by Minnesotans. And if I understood that correctly.
I believe that was a percentage change, sir.
Percentage change.
Yes.
Chair Dabney.
Okay, that's helpful. But point of fact is there's a 5.1% increase, not a 9-something percent increase. So, I mean, is this a matter of economic models versus actual facts? I mean, how do I... Your model may be right, but it apparently is off.
Well,
Mr. Dunham?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I may, one has to look at a static state versus what happens, what actually happens. So over time in every state, not just in Minnesota, but also in North Dakota, also in California, also in North Carolina, tobacco sales fall. And tobacco sales have this sort of tendency to fall by about 3 or 4% a year, and we can discuss why that's the case. So you have to look at the change in North Dakota relative to what the sales would have been had the tax increase here not had gone into effect. They would have gone down already had that not happened. Does that make sense, sir?
Mr. Chair, I understand your perspective. One last question, if I can retain it long enough to get it out of my mouth. Does your demand model also include people who are quitting smoking? Because we've seen significant drops, kind of to Chair Lincheski's point, significant drops in particularly youth taking up smoking, but also adults smoking, and expect to see the consequent health benefits for the individuals and cost savings for the state. Does your model take in that folks just quitting smoking because, A, it's too costly, and, B, it's bad for you?
Mr. Dunham?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Representative. In a way, it does. The fact is that price doesn't have a very tremendous impact on incidence, and we could discuss why that's the case. It has an effect on sales. So our model looks at sales, but the initial model that we construct is based on incidence in the states. So, for example, the amount of cigarettes that would be sold in Utah per capita would be much, much lower than the amount of cigarettes sold in, for example, North Carolina or Georgia. That's all taken into account. The demographics of the state don't change dramatically based on a tax increase, and demographics are really what drive smoking incidence.
Chair Dabney? Chair Dabney?
Fascinating. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, just we will be shutting down at noon because we have floor session at 12:15, so we'll want to give time to get over there. And also announced for tomorrow's tax meeting, it is Chair Sarah Anderson Day at the Capitol. We have two angel investment bills from Chair Anderson, so we will look forward to that. Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for Mr. Michael. But before, I wanted to just opine for a little bit. I think what we have here, of course, is a fundamental difference between the two parties. One party, our chair, we want to reduce the tax, the burden, and the other party wants to raise the tax. Chair Lanchesky, of course, will be able to respond because I just said her name. Fair enough. If that's the point, we really should just tax and or outlaw things that are bad for us, that costs the state of Minnesota in health care because we don't know how to take good care of ourselves. The facts and numbers, Mr. Dunham, that you give about lost revenue, I don't think, at least from what I hear, don't mean anything to one side because it's a bad thing and therefore we should outlaw it or tax it. So whatever revenues are lost is irrelevant to this point. Where one side, my folks in my county believe a lesser tax, more freedom. And that is why I support the bill. And for the other reason, I'll ask Mr. Michael, if the inflator, the automatic inflator, mixed with the price increase of any product, the sales product, let's say the product of the cigarettes increases, would that be considered perhaps a double inflator tax on that product?
Mr. Michael.
Mr. Chairman, Representative McDonald, the Minnesota's excise taxes, so for example, the cigarette excise tax, the alcohol excise tax, the petroleum tax, are set as fixed dollar amounts per unit of commodity. And so they don't vary based on the underlying price. I think where you would end up with a sort of a double effect is if the tax base was based on price. So, for example, if you were to decide you were going to index the sales tax rate, you would then have the effect that you're mentioning, that the sales tax revenues adjust up as the prices change or they adjust down as prices go down. So they're automatically reflect the effect of inflation. If somehow you decided, oh, I'm also going to multiply the tax rate times the, you know, one plus the percentage change in the inflation rate, then you would essentially be doubly compensating for inflation. That's not happening here because the tax is a dollar amount per unit of volume. It's per cigarette, and so the inflator adjusts that up. So it's not, the tax base does not have a price component in it.
Mr. McDonald?
Thank you. Due to time, I'll end my questions at this point.
Okay. Vice Chair Barrett?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to comment on Mr. Rush's statement regarding Taylor's Falls, which is in my district. There are two gas stations in Taylor's Falls. It's a great community, by the way. I'd recommend anyone and everyone to come up and visit us both in the winter and the summer. There's an interstate park right at the edge of town. There's also one in an interstate park right across the river in Wisconsin in St. Croix Falls. It's also named Interstate Park. So just remember Interstate Park as you come up and stop when you see the first one, not the second one. But the folks have a choice there. They can go to one or the two parks. They can go to one or the two communities. The fact is that the two convenience stores that were in town are now one convenience store and a pay at the pump. And that happened as a result of many things, cost-related issues, but primarily, I believe, according to the owner, because of the cigarette tax. So it is a real problem in border communities. People do have a choice. St. Croix Falls is larger, and we did get the benefit of a lower cigarette tax for quite a while. So folks would come, drive over the bridge, and buy their cigarettes, and they would contribute to our community. Now, a bunch of folks who used to live at or used to work at one convenience store no longer work there because it's a pay at the pump only. So I wanted to mention that primarily, but secondarily, the owner of the stations there are deathly afraid of the gas tax, the potential wholesale sales tax on gas, and what that will do in addition to the cigarette tax, what the negative effects that will have on the community and the stations and the people employed there. So I wanted to bring that to the committee's attention at the so that they remember that at the appropriate time when that bill comes up for discussion. Thank you.
Thank you, Vice Chair Barrett. Representative Simonson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think, you know, today I think we're delving a fair amount into HHS policy area, but I'm going to try to stay away from there with my final question, which would be for Mr. Dunham. And I think that you were here for the entire committee hearing, so you heard some of the earlier testimony as well. And we heard some fairly compelling testimony about some data from the Minnesota Youth Tobacco Survey. And you can, you know, either agree with that or not agree with that, but to me it's very compelling because when I voted for this bill 2 years ago, the primary reason that I did was in the hopes that we would have a positive impact on smoking rates amongst our youth. And we didn't know really what the impact would be. You know, we guessed, we projected, and as it turns out, we were right. Because we see numbers here now from this youth tobacco survey that we dropped in from 2011 from 18.1% to 10.6. And I can read through all those again, but I won't. But the reality is, I mean, we did make a difference on youth smoking rates to the positive. And I'm just curious, you know, you're advocating for this bill, which, you know, essentially would freeze things the way they are today. And if whether you agree with the survey or not, my question to you is if the survey, if we pass this bill and it gets signed into law, and 2 years from now we come back and we find that cigarette use amongst youth is increasing from the current 10.6%, I mean, does that pose a problem to you? I mean, are you willing to say, okay, I support this bill and I'd like to see it signed into law at the expense of increasing smoking rates in youth? Are you willing to go that far?
Mr. Dunham, you hate children?
No, sir, I don't. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Representative. I think there's two questions that you've asked me, and if I could address two of them and make a personal point. First, I don't think anybody wants children to smoke. I don't think anyone wants children to drink. I don't think anyone wants children to do anything that's harmful for them. That's one of the jobs of this body to do, is to make sure that the laws are such that we protect children throughout society. That said, the question as to whether a higher cigarette excise tax is going to dramatically impact youth smoking is really one that is quite debatable. First off, if I may, in this state, as in every state, it's absolutely illegal for children to buy cigarettes, for anyone under the age of 18 or in some states 21, to buy cigarettes, which means that since you're not involved in a monetary transaction, the cost really has very, very little impact. The cost of a retailer that is abiding by the law, I should say, has very, very little impact. Second, the things that I've studied this for years and years, not just surveying random people around, but actually studying the data and the economics of how tobacco markets and markets for a lot of different products work. The incidence rate, which is what you're talking about, not consumption, not how many cigarettes I'm going to smoke, but if I'm going to smoke or not, is affected by a lot of different things. And the largest of them are racial makeups of population, the age makeup of a population that's younger and older, and which is what our population is doing in this country, smokes less, because young people smoke less and old people smoke less. Amazingly, the number of war veterans has a tremendous impact on smoking rates. It was mentioned by a number of representatives here that their parents were from the Greatest Generation, and they all smoked, and that's because they were all fighting in, you know, the Second World War. Same is true of Vietnam veterans. They tend to smoke at extremely high rates. So as the population of these war veterans has fallen, smoking rates have fallen. It's what we call in economics a spurious variable, to suggest that because prices are rising and smoking rates are falling, that they're really strongly related. Now, that said, there's going to be some marginal impacts, I'm sure. But it's you know, tax policy is the most important thing that a legislature does. you know, protecting children, yes, tax policy as well. And if tax policy is not based on facts, but rather based on just emotion, good policy doesn't always get made. And I'm not here to support or counter this bill. I'm here just to provide what information I have so that you folks can make the best decisions that you can make.
Mr. Dunham, you're not for my bill?
So I don't support legislation or oppose legislation. I'm an economist. I'm not smart enough to do that.
A resource. Representative Simonson.
Mr. Chair, to that point, you know, tax policy is very important. And quite frankly, sometimes tax policy is put into place to influence behaviors. And I don't think that it's fair to say that this is was put into place. And I'm currently continuing to advocate for the current law. And I don't think it's fair to say that that's based on emotion, because I've got facts and figures here in front of me. I've got anecdotal data from when I visit my daughter's high school about kids and why they're not smoking and what the impacts of the cost is, and I can go on and on and on. So I think that we have good empirical data that we're basing decisions on. And quite frankly, you avoided the question very well, but quite frankly, what I see and what I infer from your testimony is that Big Tobacco is here today advocating for lower tobacco costs in Minnesota, irregardless of the effect that it has on smoking rates in teens and adults. With that, Mr. Chair, I'll end.
Thank you. And members, it's not my intention on this bill in any way to increase smoking amongst youth or any of that happy stuff. That's not the case at all, because by just getting rid of the inflator, which I think is bad tax policy in the first place, whether it be on gasoline, whether it be on cigarettes, whatever it is, don't tell me for a second that if we get rid of the inflator, or if we would, they're going to get their cigarettes. They're getting them illegally anyways. My district that I'm so fortunate to represent borders Iowa and Wisconsin. It shut down a lot of businesses in my district when the tax went up. That's not empirical, that's not anecdotal, that's a fact. And when I called them up, I said, what happened? They said, well, what do you think happened? We're nuts on our taxes. And members, we're not getting rid of the tax. We're not lowering the tax. We're removing the inflator. Now, if you think that's good tax policy, have an inflator, knock yourself out. But if this bill passes, people are still going to get their cigarettes. It's whatever. Okay, we have we will be done at noon, and then we'll look forward to Chair Anderson Day at the Capitol tomorrow. Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think we need to get back to what the bill does, and I appreciate you kind of pulling it back, because I think some of the testimony took us far afield. It was as if we were back in 2013. And what we're talking about is the inflator, and I didn't hear any of our witnesses, and I appreciate your traveling from Moorhead, particularly the small business owner, but I didn't hear anyone saying that they noticed a difference between December and January. And in January, an extra 7 cents went on, and I don't think it probably had a whole lot of impact. I do believe you that it did have an impact when we did the big increase. But what we're debating here is the 7 cents increase that just went in, and another one following when we have the next inflator increase. And in terms of people who, I mean, now there are people who are really like on the hunt for the biggest bargain, and they'll drive 50 miles to save $2. But the IRS tells us that the cost of owning and driving a car is about 50 cents, I think it's over 50 cents a mile now. And to save 7 cents, you're going to drive way out of your way, even if you got a pack. That's 70 cents. You're going to go way out of your way to say 70 cents. And yet we know for our teenagers who are starting and preteens, they pay attention to the pennies because they don't have many of them. The person who's working, it's less of an issue. And our major goal, and it's absolutely an amazing, astounding public health achievement, was to dramatically reduce the number of kids who started, because we know that 90% of all adult smokers started before age 18. And we need to do this. We need to do it not only for the health of every single person who takes up this terribly addictive of habit, but for just the health care costs that gets shifted onto all the rest of us in our insurance premiums and in our health and human services budget, and for the inflator increase of 7 cents The impacts of this are huge in terms of the success we've seen, and we'll continue to have that success. And so unless someone can demonstrate some that the 7 cents that went into effect on January 1st had a major impact, I think we're kind of been dragged back into debating 2013, and nobody's got that before us. And so I would just like to say I'd welcome some evidence on the 7 cents impact that took place on January 1st, because that's what this bill would impact on whether or not we had another 7 or 6 or 5 or 9 cent increase adjustment as time went on.
Thank you, Mr. Loeffler. And to Mr. Olson, how far out of the way is Fargo from Moorhead?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, it's only 1 mile to the next C-store from my store.
Okay, with that, I apologize to members. We didn't get to everybody on the list. The hour of 12:02 having arrived. You know, but Representative Loeffler, you know, it's 7 cents this year, then it might be 7 or 8 cents next year. And, you know, if it's 7 cents this year and 7 cents next year, pretty soon it's 14 cents. So with that, good government all the time.
Hey, Mr. Chairman.